Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into genetic genealogy.
Right. It's become such a powerful set of tools, hasn't it, for breaking through those, you know, those really stubborn brick walls in family history.
Exactly. If you've ever felt stuck or you're just curious about what your DNA might reveal, well, this is definitely for you. We're looking at how it helps uncover some surprising family connections.
Yeah, we've got some fantastic real-life examples. They really show how these DNA tests can unravel mysteries, things like adoptions or where the records just seem to, well, stop.
Or those whispers about unknown Karens, that kind of thing. It happens all the time in genealogy.
It does. And that frustration is real. But DNA offers like a completely different angle.
So we'll touch on the different tests, why DNA, mitochondrial DNA, autosomal, but more in the context of how they were used in these specific cases. No deep tech dive today. More about the strategy.
Okay, sounds good. Where should we start? The first story about adoption.
Yeah, let's do that one. It's a really compelling case. It involves a woman named Linda.
Right. Linda discovered only after her father had passed away that he'd actually been adopted as a baby.
Wow. So he likely never knew himself.
It seems that way. So Linda and her siblings, they started this search, this quest, really, that went on for decades to find his biological family.
And eventually they turned to DNA, right?
They did. Specifically, Linda's brother took a Y-DNA test.
Okay, so Y-DNA, that's the one passed directly down the male line, father to son, like a genetic surname almost.
Exactly. The hope was simple. Find a match in the database, get a clue about their biological surname.
And did it work?
It did. Yeah. Well, initially, they got a relatively close match with someone whose surname was Mayer.
Relatively close. So that means likely sharing a common male ancestor maybe a few centuries back. A good lead.
A very good lead. And some traditional research, you know, digging into records, turned up several Mayers living in the right place at the right time. Potential grandfathers.
Ah, but it wasn't quite that simple, was it?
Nope. Because then an even closer match popped up. Surname Meyer.
Meyer, okay.
And this match knew their family history well. They knew the original spelling was actually Meyer, M-E-I-E-R.
Okay, that's significant.
Very. And crucially, this close match knew that three of his male Meyer relatives had immigrated to the U.S. and lived near Linda's biological grandmother.
Wow, so suddenly they have three really strong candidates for the grandfather.
Exactly. But here's the thing. The Y-DNA test, it confirmed the male line, the Meyer connection, but it couldn't tell them which of those three brothers was the one.
Right, because they'd all share basically the same Y-DNA from their father.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So they need another tool. They turn to autosomal DNA testing.
Autosomal. Okay, that's the test most people take, like Ancestry DNA or 23andMe, which looks at DNA inherited from all recent ancestors, not just the direct male or female line.
That's the one. It's really good for finding closer relationships like cousins within the last, say, five or six generations.
So how do they use it here? Test descendants of those three brothers.
Exactly that. Linda's brother tested, and they found descendants of each of the three potential Meyer grandfathers who were willing to test too.
And the results?
Pretty clear, actually. While all three family lines showed some connection, one was significantly closer genetically. The amount of shared DNA pointed strongly to one specific Meyer brother.
Incredible. So they likely found their biological grandfather?
It seems so. And it's just a brilliant example of how these tests work together. Y-DNA gave the surname clue, narrowed the field.
And then autosomal DNA helped pinpoint the specific relationship.
You got it. So the takeaway, for a male adoption search, Y-DNA can be a great starting point for that surname. But you often need autosomal testing to really confirm things and sort out specific connections.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, let's shift gears. Our next story, it shows something else important. Sometimes not getting a match is actually a success.
Ah, yes, the negative result being informative. This was Ron Phillips' search. He wanted to confirm if his family descended from a Reverend George Phillips back in colonial Massachusetts.
A common goal, trying to link up to an early ancestor.
Right. Run had found some sources suggesting his earliest known Phillips ancestor, Theophilus, was the son of Zerubbabel, who was supposedly the son of the Reverend George.
But the evidence was shaky.
Very shaky. Some sources lacked proof, and others even suggested Zerubbabel might not have had kids at all. A classic genealogical puzzle.
So the theory was, if Ron was descended from Reverend George down the male line, their Y-DNA should match.
Correct. But obviously, Reverend George wasn't around to test.
Naturally. So Ron had to find living, documented male line descendants of the Reverend first.
Exactly. That took a lot of traditional research, verifying lines, finding people. But eventually, he found two confirmed descendants who agreed to do Y-DNA tests.
Okay, so what happened when they compared?
Well, first, the two known descendants. Their Y-DNA matched each other perfectly. That was great. It confirmed they likely had the Reverend's Y-DNA signature.
Good sign. And Ron's test compared to theirs?
No match. Completely different Y-DNA profiles.
Oh, so maybe a disappointment initially.
Perhaps. But think about it. That non-match is actually really valuable information.
How so?
It strongly indicates that Ron's ancestor, Theophilus, was not the son of Zerubbabel, and therefore Ron isn't a direct male line descendant of Reverend George Phillips.
Ah, so it busts the myth or the weak theory.
Precisely. And that's a DNA success. It saved Ron potentially years of chasing down a wrong line, trying to prove something that wasn't true based on flimsy evidence.
It allows him to redirect his research efforts. That's a really key point. Negative results aren't failures. They're data points that refine your search.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, next up, a different kind of surprise discovery. This involves mtDNA.
Mitochondrial DNA. So this traces the direct maternal line, mother to child, way back. Only daughters pass it on, though.
Right. And this story is about Anne Marie Hathaway. She took an mtDNA test, maybe not even super deep into genealogy yet, just curious, perhaps expecting, you know, European roots.
And?
The result came back as haplogroup A2.
A2. What's significant about that?
A2 is a haplogroup found almost exclusively in people with American Indian ancestry.
Wow. So, a complete surprise. No family stories about that.
Apparently not. Nothing known on her direct maternal line. So this mtDNA result really sparked her interest. She wondered, okay, do I have other Native American DNA?
So she turned to autosomal testing next to get that broader ancestry estimate.
She did. And the autosomal results estimated about 3% of her DNA was Native American.
Okay, 3%. That suggests the ancestor wasn't like thousands of years ago, right? More recent.
Exactly. Recent enough to leave a clear signal in the autosomal DNA. To confirm it came through her mother's line, as the mtDNA suggested.
She had her mother take an autosomal test, too.
Yep, and her mother's test confirmed it. The Native American DNA segments Anne Marie had were indeed inherited from her mother.
Fascinating. So the mtDNA pointed to the deep maternal origin, and the autosomal helped estimate how recent and confirmed the inheritance path.
And the autosomal test also helped her find living genetic cousins who shared both some of the same autosomal DNA and that A2 mtDNA haplogroup.
Which gives her people to collaborate with, potentially pooling research on that shared maternal line to find the specific ancestor.
Absolutely. It gave her a clear focus for her research. So, key point here, mtDNA for that deep maternal line, autosomal for the bigger picture, recent ancestry estimates, and finding cousins on all lines.
Great example. Okay, one more story. This one deals with a really common challenge. What do you do when the ancestor you need DNA from is long gone?
Right. This involves Helen Johnson, born back in 1889 in New York, her birth certificate, father not known.
Oof, and the mother.
Also a mystery. Helen was raised by various families, never knew her biological parents, and sadly passed away without that knowledge.
So no direct DNA from Helen possible. The research has to rely on her descendants.
Exactly. Helen had two children, a son and a daughter. And both of those children had kids, Helen's grandchildren.
So the strategy was to test the grandchildren.
Initially, they tried mtDNA first. They tested Helen's daughter's son, hoping for a match on Helen's direct maternal line via her daughter. No luck. No significant matches turned up in the mtDNA test.
Okay, plan B, autosomal again.
Plan B was autosomal. The thinking was, okay, grandchildren inherit about 25% of their DNA from grandparent. If they tested two grandchildren, one descended from Helen's son and one from Helen's daughter.
Any DNA segments they share with each other likely came down from their shared grandmother, Helen, because their other grandparents were all different people.
Precisely that logic. So they tested two male grandchildren from the different lines.
And did they share DNA?
They did. A bit less than the average for first cousins, but definitely within the possible range. And importantly, the tests also flagged numerous other matches, people estimated to be third cousins, who matched both grandchildren.
So those matches must be related through Helen somehow. That's progress.
It is progress. But it also highlights the next big hurdle. They know these people are related through Helen, likely third cousins,
right?
But who were Helen's parents?
Right. You have a list of genetic matches, but without surnames or known connections linking them together in the right time and place near Helen's birth.
It's tough.
It's a huge puzzle. It requires tons of traditional genealogy, now building trees for those matches, looking for geographical overlaps, common ancestors between the matches themselves, hoping to triangulate back to Helen's parents. It's ongoing.
It really shows that autosomal DNA is fantastic for connecting descendants when you can't test the ancestor directly.
But you absolutely need the traditional research skills to make sense of those matches and figure out the actual connections.
These stories, they really drive home some core ideas, don't they? Like, DNA testing is amazing, powerful, but it's not magic.
Not at all. It's not like a bulldozer clearing the path instantly. It works best hand in hand with solid traditional genealogy, record searches, analysis, building trees.
And we saw how using multiple types of tests, like Y-DNA and autosomal, or mtDNA and autosomal, could be really effective. One test gives one piece, another adds a different layer. Absolutely. Which leads to, I think, the need for a bit of strategy before you even test.
Yeah, thinking about who is the best person to test for a specific question. Which type of test makes sense first? What's your plan B if the first test doesn't give you answers?
And how are you going to connect those DNA results back to your paper trail research? That planning part is crucial.
Definitely. But the potential payoff is huge, isn't it? Unlocking secrets hidden for generations, finding relatives you never knew.
It really is remarkable. And remember, even small DNA percentages or those negative results like Ron's, they all provide clues. They guide your research, point you in new directions, or tell you where not to look.
So as you're working on your own family tree, maybe think about those persistent questions you have. Could genetic genealogy offer a new way forward?
It's definitely worth considering. And here's a final thought to leave you with. What family story, maybe one you've heard your whole life, might actually hold a hidden truth that your DNA is just waiting to reveal?